if you tell me I can't do something, that's the first thing I'm going to go do. I'm going to show you how wrong you are and that it can be done. I quit my corporate job in October. We had a lot of naysayers. A lot of people said, oh, there's too many consultants. It's a really saturated market. You'll never make it. Again, telling me that I would never get that minority participation certificate. We've grown every year since, but that first year was pretty tough. And that's just a little, that's the fight in me, I guess.
Shelly, thank you so much for joining us on Pressure Tested. See, I'm already off to a bad start. It's going to be a little rough today. I had a really long work day, even though it's only 2 o'clock, but I'm excited for this conversation. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
So you're a referral from one of my favorite people, Kelly Smith. So how do you and Kelly know each other?
We both went through the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program, and then we're both on the APWC, that's Association of Professional Women in Construction. We're on that board together.
How many people are in that group?
Close to 200 now, and we've expanded into Houston and Austin.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. How long has it been in existence?
Since 2016, June 16.
That's like the one, that's like another group that I just never seem to be able to circle back to. I'm so interested in that group, so I'm going to have to get you to.
It's a great group for women.
Yeah, I want to get plugged into that one. Okay, I want to hear about how you started DCG Environmental. Just kind of take me through like your early career path, what you were doing up to 2016 and kind of how the business got started.
It's a funny story, kind of. It's my husband's career. I don't know anything about asbestos and mold. And very common as an asbestos consultant to have a big project and then get laid off. And I'm talking like 5 to 8 years, finish that big project, get laid off, then have another one. And so him and a friend of his would always help each other get jobs. And the last job he was at was the DFW airport. He was in charge of the TRIP program. That's when they remodeled A and B, terminals A and B. And he got laid off and I was like, that was like the third time. And I was like, why don't you just start your own business so you don't keep getting laid off? And he's like, I don't really know how to do that. And I was kind of joking. I was like, well, then you could work for me. And it was a joke, but it really, I 100% owned the company so that we could be minority-owned, women-owned business. And that there was no contradiction to that. A lot of people told me that I'd never get that certification or anything. And it's because a lot of people in our industry had their business in their wife's name, but the wife didn't really run the company.
Yep.
And so we didn't want to have to fight that fight. I mean, they literally came to the office, made sure that I signed contracts, made sure that I could talk the language. They double-checked, triple-checked everything.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was cool. But it's kind of how we got started. We were struggling. we had a lot of credit card debt, and we had just moved from a really pretty big house, like 3,600 square feet, down to 1,200 square foot Cracker Box house to start paying off our debt. Our kids had graduated from high school and went off to college, so it was just me and my husband, and my stepson was, you know, half here, half there. And so we just downsized and started to pay things off, and that's when he got laid off. Went from six figures to like $800 a month.
Oh, my gosh.
And then child support took half of that, and so we pulled the 401k for the second time. So there was only like $30,000 in there and went through that pretty fast, and I was like, hey, go get a job or start your own thing. I don't care. I'll help you whatever way you want to go. And so that's really how we got started. We just kind of bootstrap jumped in and got started.
So what were you doing before that?
I was a buyer. I've been in purchasing for a long time. I ran restaurants young.
Okay.
Manager at McDonald's at 17.
Oh, wow. That is young.
I know. I think about that nowadays. I was like, is there a 17-year-old I would put keys to a $1 million store in their hands? I'm like, I don't know.
No.
But so I grew up as a manager. I've always been a leader or a boss in some kind of way. I wouldn't tell you I was a good boss at 17, but still responsible for the store and everything in it. And moved up from there, went to Hamburger University.
What's that?
McDonald's literally has a college where you go to Hamburger University.
Really?
And you learn about,
the business?
Yeah, business, Big Macs. They teach us like, you know, if you let a Big Mac, I don't know if they do that anymore, but they used to have the bins that they set all the food in. And they literally show us what happens to a hamburger as it deteriorates over the time.
Really?
Yeah. So I know a lot about food service and good stuff and bad stuff.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Being in this field, we see a lot of restaurants in the back scenes and some of it's good, some of it's not.
Gosh, I bet it's terrible.
There's some places I won't eat.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you going to tell us?
No.
That's so funny. Yeah, I am a terrible cook, so we eat out a lot. Yeah. And I mean, I'm like the stereotypical career mom. So I'm like, let's go out to eat. And so now I'm like, you know, I'm sure that some of these places I would never eat again if I knew what actually goes on back there. But
It's true. It's a bad industry to be in on our side. It's like, oh, I can't walk into anything anymore. And God, buying a house with my husband's impossible.
Really?
Oh, he picks, you know, we know the back parts of it. So he's looking for everything.
So what about like new construction?
New construction's, well, construction's not like it used to be.
Yeah, that's true.
Now it's just thrown up so fast. And
it's true.
You know, what's funny is asbestos is a really great building material. And that's why all those old buildings are still standing. But the new stuff gets thrown up so fast, it's going to fall apart before the old stuff does.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. We're on the heating and cooling side, we do like residential new construction. And so, I mean, some of these projects go so fast that it doesn't even make sense to have like a WIP for them because they're just in and out so fast. I mean, 45 days they build a house and, you know, we're ready to service it the next month. It's insane.
Blows my mind.
I know. It's crazy. Okay, so it's 2016 and you decide to leave your corporate job and you guys just go for this. You go all in on starting your own company. Tell me what the first few years were like.
I kept my corporate job until October. I quit my corporate job in October. We had a lot of naysayers. A lot of people said, oh, there's too many consultants. It's a really saturated market. You'll never make it. Mm. Again, telling me that I would never get that minority participation certificate. And I'm the type of girl, like, if you tell me I can't do something, that's the first thing I'm going to go do. I'm going to show you how wrong you are and that it can be done. And that's just a little, that's the fight in me, I guess. But it worked.
Yeah.
We've grown every year since. But that first year was pretty tough. I think we did a whopping $63,000 for the year.
Oh, really?
In sales.
In sales. Yeah. And that's not bottom line. That's sales. How did you create contacts? How did you do business development?
He had a lot of contacts in the industry from being at the airport. And I mean, that was a really major project in DFW. And so a lot of people in this industry came through that that contract.
Got it.
Like everybody in this industry worked at the airport at some point in time. And we were still working out there, right? Now they're remodeling C.
Okay. And you have a contract there?
Not with the airport, no. Okay. Terracon holds that contract. We sub for them a lot.
Oh, cool.
But we hold a contract with American Airlines, so we do a lot of work for them.
Wow. That's great.
And then but it's a small community. And I used to talk to him about that. I was like, you know all the contacts. I don't know anybody. If you drop dead tomorrow, DCG's gone.
Yeah.
Like, you're it. You are DCG. So we started making the phone calls come through the office to me. And then as we started growing, now the phone calls go to the office. And, you know, we still get called by clients too. But to be able to grow and scale, we had to get other people involved and get help and not just be like, we wanted people to know DCG, not just Robert and Shelley.
Yep.
Right. And so you got to start taking yourself out of that framework to be able to grow the company. And so that was really hard. You know, it's like giving your baby and taking it off to college and giving it to somebody else.
It's such a critical step, though.
Yeah.
So the heating and cooling company's been in business for 4 years. And just this last year, a couple of guys left us, took a bunch of our builders, took a bunch of our relationships because we just never, you know, we trusted these guys and it's fine that they left. I mean, everybody's entitled to go do what they want.
Yeah.
But we just were never sticklers about making their customers our customers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, instead of us just being okay with them calling them directly, making them call the office.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good lesson for us because even at that point, we were doing, you know, $10 million a year, but we still allowed some of these people that worked for us to have these like private relationships. And it got us in the end. So that's the only way to scale.
Yeah. It's a hard navigation because you want to be able to trust your employees and non-competes in Texas aren't
trash.
Worth the paper you write them on.
That's
so,
right.
You know, maybe 6 months and you're good, but after that, forget it. But I have the phone calls come through the office because I don't want my people in the field interrupted. Like, we're in buildings, we're in homes, and they don't need to be in front of our client on the phone.
That's right.
And so we handle a lot of that through the office to give them the ability to do their job without being interrupted. Not that they can't have the contacts. They get contacted sometimes. They all have business cards to hand out. Yeah, but it's tough to navigate that, to have the right people on your team. And I'm open with my team. Like, I had one just quit this year, and he went out on his own. And I'm like, I'll help you.
Yeah.
If that's what you want, please talk to me. Let's talk about it. I'll help you navigate that. Don't go after my clients. There's plenty of clients out there to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've run into each other a couple of times on some of my clients, but most of them have reached out to him, not him reaching out to them. And we just have that open conversation. If I hear something, I'm the type of girl, I'm just going to pick up the phone and call you.
Yeah.
Like, hey, so-and-so said this. I just want to know, is it true? And if it is, how are we going to handle it? Because I can either be mad at you or we can work together or we can figure it out.
That's right.
But just talking behind each other's back is not the way to resolve anything. So, and that's what I did. And it's been great. And I use him as a sub a lot. I'm cheering for him. I want him to do well.
Okay. All right. Serious question. Direct question.
Yeah.
Do you think that you are direct and capable of doing that because you did not grow up in the South? You grew up in New England where people are just a little bit more direct.
Honestly, I grew up as a military brat. Okay. So I've moved around every 3 years of my life and have had to make new friends all the time. Mm. And so I'm very open and very direct. And here's who I am. You like me or you don't like me. A lot of people, when you first meet me, don't like me. I've been told I have a really rough exterior,
Really?
But if you know me, like, I'll give you my heart. I'll do anything for anybody that I feel needs something. And it takes a while for people to warm up to me or maybe for me to warm up to them. And I think that comes back to that moving every 3 years and having to meet somebody brand new every 3 years of my life. I'm like, whoa, let me, you know, I think now that I think about it, honestly, from a psychology standpoint, I'm just going to leave in 3 years, so I'm not going to get real close.
Oh, okay.
I never thought about it that way before, but that's fair. Don't make me cry. That's not what this podcast. But yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes I'm always like trying to analyze, where did that come from? Or why do I feel this way? Or how can I lead better? What happened here that made me feel that way? And then how can I teach somebody else? Like, hey, everybody's got something going on that's going to make you react a certain way.
Yes.
And I'm always digging into that. But I just realized that I think I'm moving all the time. I'm really like, I'm slow to get to know people and to get to be real friendly. And so sometimes people think I'm really just direct or standoffish or
I think sometimes just confidence comes over as directness a little bit.
True.
I think you have a lot of confidence. You know who you are. And sometimes it's weird. I think it's more about other people than it is you. Huh. Like how people react to somebody being direct. Because I get told I'm direct and stuff. I grew up in the same place my whole life. So I was with those kids forever. I mean, you know, so I don't, but I'm also, I get told that too. But I think it's just when you have a confidence in yourself, I think it's how other people interpret instead of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So tell me about the business some more. So how many employees are you guys at right now?
We have 17.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me kind of the different levels of employees. Are you kind of like, are they called techs or like, how does that work?
In the asbestos world, we have different levels of licensing.
Okay.
So an asbestos consultant is the highest level you can have. And they have all of the licenses that everybody else has.
Got it.
And so you have a asbestos consultant. Then you can have an air monitor / project manager. They hold two licenses in one, and an asbestos inspector. And then I also have mold consultants. And so there's two levels of mold. There's a mold technician and a mold consultant. So mold consultants are the ones that can write the reports, read the results. Same thing with asbestos consulting. They do everything. They write the specifications for the jobs. They interpret all the results. And my team, like in the field, are multi. They have both licenses. They're both asbestos and mold. That makes it easier. Like if we go on site, especially if you have a mold problem and we're going to cut that drywall and it's a commercial building, we have to test it for asbestos as well. So instead of having to call two people, we can handle both at one time.
Got it.
Faster, quicker.
So you think you're doing more commercial or more residential right now?
Right now it's a toss up. It's really kind of a weird market at the moment. I would say we're doing more commercial right now than residential, but we do both. And then we have private clients and industrial. So we do hospitals, cities, all of it.
I think something that's really hard. So we do commercial and residential too. And something that I think is really hard about that is it's hard to like figure out how to market, right? Mm-hmm. Because you have, you know, do you want to market to consumers? Do you want to market to businesses? And that's like a hard thing. So like, do you actively market to residential customers or is it all kind of word of mouth?
We have for the past 8.5 years have been nothing but word of mouth.
Wow, that's nice.
And have grown 20% or more every year over year. This year is the first year we redid our website. We started paying for Meta ads. Just had a meeting with my marketing team today. And it's like, it doesn't work in our industry.
Okay.
It hasn't been fruitful. And maybe it's the stuff that we're doing or there's a little bit more on my backside that I have to provide for them to do all the algorithm. I don't understand. Yeah. That's why I pay them to do it. Whatever all the algorithms is, if you give them this name or this, you know, a list of your people, then it goes out and finds like people, kind of spider web stuff. I don't know. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
But it's a lot to there's some of that that's going to happen that they tell me that it will increase my odds. But this was built on the good old boy system. I mean, it really was a handshake in the old days and consultants were the ones that went out and found the work, bid the work. You know, now we all have business development teams and it's just
business development teams, $500,000 marketing budgets. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting. Yes. The whole thing's exhausting.
Yeah. Like, and we just started that this year.
People just call us to do business with us. That'd be really great. Yeah.
Just trust me. We're good. We're fast. We're good. I promise.
Okay. It's something I want to ask you. And I know that, you know, you own the company and I don't know that you necessarily go out and test for mold is such a big word in the HVAC industry. Mm-hmm. So, and I probably shouldn't talk about this. I don't really care. We have this like active lawsuit and we didn't do anything. Like, it's whatever. It's so stupid. But because of this water that got in, now there's mold. And it's like as soon as somebody said mold, it like brought in this whole separate insurance that came in. It was mm-hmm. a freaking disaster. Mm-hmm. But it's like mold is such a scary word in the HVAC industry. Like if our technicians go out and they point to a grill that's had like some moisture on it mm-hmm. that looks like it has a little bit of mold. People are calling like, do we move out of our house? Like, what do we do? I'm like, I don't know. I don't think it's a big deal. But so tell me about mold. Like, why is this such a big deal to everybody? And is it a mold, big deal?
It can be.
Okay.
Right? It's different for everybody. And I have a perfect example of that. My husband and I were in a hotel mm-hmm. and I'm like, there's mold in here. I know there's mold in here. He's like, I don't see him. I don't smell anything. I'm like, I'm telling you, there's mold in here. So he got up and started looking around. And by the front door, that had wallpaper that was peeling up in the corner. Mm. And he peeled it back and it was black behind it. He's like, how did you know that was there? And I'm like, I can smell it. So it's different by person. Yeah. Everybody reacts to mold differently. Mm. He didn't smell it. I could smell it. That means I'm reacting to it. Whether it's an allergic reaction, a respiratory reaction, everybody's so afraid of it because of the black mold of the 80s. Right? Back in the 80s, Stachybotrys is, we call it the famous black mold of the 80s. There's tons of black mold.
Okay.
Stachybotrys is one that a lot of people react to. And so a lot of people were getting sick.
Okay.
And so that became the big, what I believe was the fear basis of mold because it became public. It became known. It became a common word. Everybody Googles themselves into a frenzy. And I literally say that to people that call. They're like, oh my God, I got a 2-year-old. Do I need to move out? And do I need it? And I'm like,
that's what we hear.
And I tell them, I was like, you've Googled yourself into a frenzy. And they go, I have. And they take a deep breath. And I'm like, I don't make jokes about it, but I try and calm them down and their fears. I'm like, listen, everybody reacts differently. Do you have any rashes? Do you have any, you know, respiratory issues? I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
I can't tell you to move out of your house. Yeah. I can't tell you that you have allergies. You've got to go get that medical advice. If you're not having any of those symptoms, you can make the decision to stay there. I can't make that for you. And I have so many people that try and make us make that decision for them.
Oh, yeah.
I have competitors that use scare tactics. Oh my God, you've got mold. You need to move out. I literally went to an apartment complex and a mold consultant had put a notice on the door that said, do not come in here. There's mold. And we're not allowed to do that. I sent a picture of it and I was like, can a mold consultant do this? We don't have that authority to do that.
Yeah.
They're like, absolutely not. And they didn't have hardly any mold. It was mold on the windowsill because they had condensation on the windowsill.
Okay.
It wasn't move out of your house mold.
That's the mold that we run into is the condensation from an HVAC system, especially on the grills. Mm-hmm. Like, so that's different than this like scary mold that everybody was afraid of in the 80s, right?
Can be. Okay. It can, if it stays long enough, mold's different. It can grow within 24 to 48 hours.
Really?
And all different types of mold. And then it can grow into another colony and a different colony. So it could start off as Cladosporium or Cotomium, and then it could grow into and become and have more, and then become Stachybotrys because it sat there long enough, and now those spores are there.
So this is a big deal then?
It can be,
okay, so, you know, the women that are listening today at home, they run into mold in their house. What do they do? They call you?
Yes. Okay. So there's regulations and state rules, right? So state gets involved when there's more than 25 contiguous feet. Contiguous means straight line. Contiguous is mountainous. Like mold grows in colonies up and down. And so at a certain point, if there's that much mold, that's when you have to have professionals. State law says you have to have licensed mold remediators, licensed mold consultant come in and take care of that. If it's under 25 contiguous feet, anybody can take care of it.
Okay.
You can have a if you're a mold professional, like you hold a MRC license, a mold remediation company, you're supposed to have a mold protocol by a licensed mold consultant. That's us. We come in and find it. We write out what's called a mold protocol. That's a document that says, here's how you have to clean this up. Mm. The mold remediation company has their own work plan. They come in and clean it up. When they're done, we come back and test again to make sure it's all gone. If it's not, they fail. Then they have to re-clean. and they keep going until they get a clearance from us that says they cleaned it all correctly. Then both of us, the mold remediator and the mold consultant, sign what's called a certificate of mold damage remediation.
Got it.
So that, as a homeowner, that's your get out of free jail card, if you will. That is yeah. your document that says, yes, I had mold, but I had it cleaned up by professionals. And I always recommend that for homeowners, because if you want to sell your house, you know, on those new TREC forms now, the can't remember what TREC stands for, but
yeah.
the real estate forms, you have to say whether you've had mold or not.
Mm.
So as long as you have that documentation saying, yeah, I had it, but I had it cleaned up by professionals, and you've got that CMDR, that is you being able to sell your house saying I had it cleaned up.
So anytime anybody in the city of Dallas wants to go and restore one of the hotels, Old Parkland, any of those old buildings, they pretty much have to call a company like yours to like look at all, to inspect all of it, right?
For asbestos, for sure. Okay. A lot of people don't know that Texas state law is if you remodel, repair, or demo a commercial building, no matter when it was built. You could build it yesterday, you're going to change it today, you have to have an asbestos test.
Mm.
And so a lot of people skip that part. And they have state inspectors that go around and inspect job sites. So if there's a dumpster outside, state inspectors are going to stop by and say, hey, where's your asbestos survey? And if you don't have one, everything stops.
Eesh.
Everything gets put on hold until you get that asbestos survey done.
That's crazy.
So it's good. You need to know it. A lot of times there were cities that weren't requiring it when they were going in for permits. And now the state inspectors went around to a lot of the cities to say, hey, you guys know this is a state law. It's been a state law since before I was born, probably.
Yeah.
But it's been in play for a long time, and a lot of people don't know about it.
Huh.
And it can be fined up to $10,000 a day.
Yikes.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I've seen a $4,000 fine, but I've never seen 10.
Yeah,
but
until you told me what asbestos was yesterday, I didn't even know. I just thought it was something bad.
No, it's
didn't
a
know
great
it was a building material. Yeah. I had no clue.
It's a natural fiber, and it's a great building, a bonding material.
Mm.
So you find it a lot in mastics. Mirror mastic is where we find it still today a lot. Drywall joint compound in the texture, not mm-hmm. necessarily in the drywall. Mm-hmm. There is a period of time where we had it in drywall itself, but now it's usually in the texture or the mud.
But it does. But again, asbestos is one of those things that's like, you know, you see the commercials and it's like, you're going to, you know, die or something if you have asbestos in your building. But you said basically unless you like cut into it, it doesn't even hurt.
You have to breathe it. It's dangerous when you can breathe it. So anytime you're remodeling or demo or repairing, if you're cutting into it, make it sandy, make it dirty.
Yeah, then
not,
it's a big deal.
Not dirty. But when you can breathe it, when you get it airborne, that's when it's dangerous. But it's a great, it's waterproof. It's fire, not waterproof, sorry. Weatherproof, mm-hmm. fireproof. It's why a lot of these old buildings are still standing there.
That's wild.
That's what I believe. I mean, it's a great building material, mm-hmm. but you can't breathe it.
Now.
Right. So the production of it, right? All the manufacturing plants and the quarries and where they cut it. A lot of Navy shipyards, they had it in the boats and the submarines. Those guys inhaled it a lot, and that's why that's where you get all the mesothelioma and the late night commercials of, have you been affected by asbestos?
Yeah. Because that's all, you know, to the average person, that's all that they know about mold or asbestos right. is what they've seen on late night TV.
Yep.
So your company, all just men? You the
no.
only female?
No. Actually, we have 7, 8, 9, 10. We have more females than men, actually. In the
really?
Field, in the field, I have more men than females. I had two female inspectors. One of them went out on maternity leave. And then myself, I'm an inspector as well.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to know. I wanted to know what it took to go do these jobs. And I wanted to be able to talk the talk and walk the walk.
Man, right?
You can't. My employees can't say, oh, I had to do this. And I don't know what they're talking about. I do it. And it's gross sometimes, but sometimes it's really cool at the same time.
No, I think there's a lot of power in that. So so I run the HVAC company, and I, like, my first job was in HVAC. So I worked in a service department for 6 years,
mm-hmm.
and no one thinks that I know anything about HVAC. So they'll say something to me, and I'll say something back, and they'll be like, maybe she does know.
You know what you're talking about.
But I just know enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I know enough to have a conversation with somebody where they're like, oh, she does know what she's talking about. But I wish I knew more. Like, especially when it comes to install and stuff, I'm always like, God, I wish I knew. So we all do all this new construction work. So we're always fighting over material, like how much material costs. And, you know, I get all these vendors in here and they're like, oh, you know, well, you got to have that and you got to have that. And I'd like love to be able to be like, F you, I do not need that. I need this, this, and this.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't, you know. So
go out on a couple installs with them.
You know, that I'm actually to that point now. So we do a lot of work, like our production work with subs. We could never keep up the ball. We could never employ enough people to not do it that way. And I know these subs are going to be like, what is this girl doing here? Like, what is she? Why is she watching me do this install? But I'm thinking about just going for it anyway.
I feel like it gives us more respect. Like, coming into this industry, very male-dominated industry, if you know what you're talking about, you get more respect than if you try and walk in and not know, or you try and use, lack of better terms, but the sex appeal. Like, don't show up to a job site in heels and a short skirt. Oh, I'm sorry. No. You just set women back 20 years. Sell somewhere else. Like, on the job site's not the place to do it. I mean, I could play softball in high heels if I wanted to, right? Like, yes, could I do it? Sure. Do I want to do that? No. I'm in a male-dominated field. I'm going to show up on a job site looking like wearing the right stuff, not trying jeans to just come out here and be cute. No.
That's good.
But when you know your stuff, you get the respect of like, oh, you know, now it's like, let's call Shelly. She'll know the answer.
That's not, right.
Let's see if she knows. Now you know I know.
Yeah, I think sometimes business development females get a bad rep for that. You know, because, and so I always like when I meet business development people and I sit down with them and like, you know, they're that beautiful woman. And then they just tell me everything about the company and they can just, you know, they're not going to miss a beat on exactly what they do.
Right.
I'm like, okay, all right.
She knows.
So, you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's funny though. All right. So whenever I was in utilities, I was a project manager for a little bit. And I remember like, you just know what your uniform is. Like I had a pair of Red Wing boots and I wore those boots every day for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Those jeans and a polo. Like that's what I was in for 2 years. It was not a fun, but it's what I knew I had to show up in.
Yeah.
And as a woman, when you show up on a job site, people are already going to pay attention to you because you're the, you know, you're like the minority, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
So you just have to, I agree with that. You have to show up and like, you have to look the part.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that's really good. Tell me about, so you're the boss, you're in charge, financials, the whole thing. So like, what do you guys do? Do you have an accounting department that works for you, or are you like the accounting department?
No, I have a team.
That's amazing.
Yep. I have a CFO. She's director of ops is what her title is, but she does all the HR, all the payroll, all the banking. And then I have a AR, accounts receivable. She collects all the money. And then I have somebody else that puts all the invoicing in.
There you go. Yeah. That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Got to keep them separate.
Yeah. Yeah, all the checks and balances.
Yeah. And then I'm always watching over, checking the
P&L. I always feel like it just, when I meet with female operators, I always feel like they end up taking on a bigger load with accounting.
Always.
Always.
You got to know your numbers. You got to know where your money is.
Well, yeah, but I don't always see that with men. Like when I'm talking to men who own businesses, they're like, no, there's a girl in the office that does that.
Yeah.
But women.
But they
women
still know like their numbers.
They do. They yeah. will. I agree with that. They will know their numbers. They're not necessarily sure how the numbers came to be, but they know their numbers.
Yeah.
But women always just like, they stay a little closer to accounting, I've noticed. Like it's just kind of like in our DNA to pay more attention to that, I think.
I would agree with that. But I have an accounting background too. So that's,
do you?
I love that part.
Me too.
I love to know the numbers and mess with the collections and I got to get out of their way. They're really good at it. I just need to stay out of the way.
That's funny. I always see this meme that I think is really funny. And I'm always like, man, I hope this never applies to me. But there's like this meme that's been circulating. It's supposed to be a boss, like the boss of the company. And it's like just showed up to send two emails, set everybody on an ASAP project and basically just get everybody in an uproar. And now I'm going to leave at 1 o'clock. Like I always think that's
I want to be that boss.
I'm like, oh man, if I ever make it to that, I'm gonna have it made. So tell me about your kids.
They're awesome.
You guys have a blended family, right?
We do. Yep. I have a daughter. He had a son. We talked about having one ourselves. I babysat my niece and forgot to feed her. So we decided we didn't need any more kids. Yeah, we were out on a soccer field and she's getting kind of whiny. She was one. My sister never let me babysit again until she was like 12.
Like, I love that.
I can't remember. I was like, my mom called to check in. She's like, so how's it going? And I was like, fine. She's a little fussy. You know, I hate whiny kids. She's like, what'd you feed her for lunch?
I hate whiny kids.
What'd you feed her for lunch? I'm like, that might be why she's fussing. She was 1 year old. It's like,
oh my gosh.
I fed her. Hilarious. She's great.
But, so how old were you when you had kids?
I was 28 when I had my daughter.
Okay.
She just turned 30 this year. So do the math. I'm 58. And my son is 26.
Man.
Yeah. They're both married. Yeah. They're both went to college, both got married right out of college. And I'm just waiting on grandbabies now.
Man, that's amazing. Yeah. You know, me and my husband, my husband's older. He's 51. But we always talk about having another kid. And so the girl that does our marketing, she's been out on maternity leave. She brings her baby up yesterday. And I'm, like, not really a baby person. Like, definitely. I have my one baby, and, like, that's it. I was good. But then I saw her, I was like, oh, I want another baby. And I was like, wait.
No.
What are you talking about? Like, no, you don't.
No, I don't.
Like, you have a career. Yeah. Like, when are you going to take care of a baby?
I want a grandbaby. I don't want a baby. You can give him back at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I was it's like the feminine urge every once in a while. You see,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, I should have had another one. Maybe I could go adopt.
Maybe I could have a boy, you know? And yeah. It's like, what? What? No. You don't really want that. Stop.
Get a dog.
Like, I have three.
I have four.
Yeah, I've actually really been pressuring my husband to get a fourth dog, but it's just a lot of work. Mm-hmm. Dogs are as much work as kids. My husband's out of town right now. And, full disclosure, like, he doesn't sleep well, so he gets up really early. He was also a military brat, moved around every 3 years, you know, can make friends in any room. It's really, y'all have a whole dynamic. Like, there's a whole group of people that were military brats that...
We're best friends as soon as we meet, too.
Yeah. I mean, but then it's like... Oh, and I'm just totally lost my train of thought. But what he does is, like, he meets people, and they're, like, best friends in the moment. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go, like, 2 years without talking to him. Because he's just used to, like, he's just, like, moving on. And so he doesn't have a lot of close friends.
Right.
I was like, that's so weird.
Yeah.
He was like, well, I always had to make new friends.
Yeah.
And, like, he lived in some rough places. Like, where all did you guys live?
My parents are also blended family. So they met in Vegas. And right out of Vegas, we moved to Europe. So I lived in Holland from 6th grade to 9th grade. It was amazing. Yeah.
Wow.
And then we moved to New York, upstate New York, Plattsburgh. Very cold, but very cool. And then to Portsmouth, New Hampshire. That's where I graduated high school. And then Iowa State and a guy in the Air Force, and he got orders to Holland. So I went to go live with my boyfriend in Holland. At the same time, my dad got orders to Spain. So when the relationship didn't work out in Holland, I just moved home to Spain.
Wow.
Had a really rough life.
You lived all over the place.
Yes. Yeah,
that's
I've been
so
all over
cool.
Europe. It's amazing. But it gets, you know, now where do I go?
Yeah.
I still love to go to Europe. I love taking, like, every time my kids graduated to high school or college, we took them to Europe. And wherever they wanted to go, they got to pick their trip.
Really?
Yeah, that was cool.
Okay, well, you're going to have to break this down for me because I want to go to Europe this summer. Uh-huh. And my husband's 6'3", and he's, like, such a baby because he's like, okay, yeah, well, let's go to Europe, but can we fly first class? And I was like, no.
Yes.
Yeah, I was like, you don't understand.
No, the answer is yes.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
It's so expensive.
Don't you have a company credit card with the
no,
like, points
not that,
on it?
Not that kind.
No.
Not yet.
All right. Lesson one. Get a credit card that has points on it if you like to travel.
Okay.
And just make sure you pay it off every month. But I have everything in my company and everything from my home goes to the same airline. Well, not anymore. They changed the program. But everything goes on the airline points. Mm. So I fly for free a lot.
Dang.
And then the more you fly, the more points you get. They get two times or three
times.
Which
card do you have?
Citibank. City.
Okay, I have a Citi card too. But I mean, I don't have it set up through the business.
No, change it to get to airline points.
That's good.
I fly for free all the time.
Wow. So you have to go first class if you're going to fly to Europe.
When I'm flying more than 6 hours, yes.
Really?
Really more than 4 hours.
I was really telling him he was going to have to suck it up in economy.
No, not at 6 feet.
No. Well, dang.
If you don't want to spend the money, be a treat and let him sit up there then. But I'm telling you, once you do fly first class, it will ruin you. And especially if you get the lay down bed.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know
at 6 foot if he's going to fit in there, but it'll still be better than a seat.
He lived in Thailand the last like 10 years of his life. So I flew over to Thailand like two or three times and I, you know, didn't have any money. So I packed myself into economy like everybody else. And so I just have this idea that if I can get through it, then we're going to be fine.
No, but you're little. You can fit. We can curl up in a seat.
I was hoping you were going to tell me, no, make it, suck it up and sit in economy.
I will tell you, that's one of the best things my business coach ever taught me is like, treat yourself.
Really?
Yeah.
I love that.
I get massages once a week. Mm. I have to. I can't function. My neck gets too tight.
Really?
Yeah. It's really helped improve my health a whole bunch. But
tell me about the business coach.
Oh, she's amazing. Chris Plackey.
Okay.
Chris with a K. She has a podcast that's Leadership is Feminine.
Love that.
Yeah, I love it. And we're part of, it's called Sage. And so you have to be a 7-figure CEO to be a part of her group.
Okay.
And we meet 4 times a year. In different places.
Okay.
And she makes us go to Hawaii every year.
Oh, wow.
Write off business.
Oh, yeah, business expense.
Right. But then places like we had a meeting in Martha's Vineyard. I would have never gone to Martha's Vineyard. It wasn't even on my bucket list, but yeah. It is beautiful.
Really?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. That's cool. Boston is a favorite. We do Boston a lot. And then Tahoe.
And so it's not industry specific. She's just a business coach.
Yep. And it's amazing too, because you get outside looks, right? Like the funny thing is, as CEOs or owners, we can sit down and complain about something, like I could solve your problem like that and you could solve my problem, but we get emotionally involved and it makes it harder for us to see how to solve the issue. Where coming back from Hawaii 1 year, I got an ugly text message from one of my employees. My business coach is like, "You're firing him, right?" And, of course, I go through all the, and I was like, no, she's right. I have been putting up with this behavior for way too long.
Yeah.
This is what I pay her a lot of money to teach me, is to not put up with that kind of behavior. You know, we hire people for one thing, and it's to make money, right? To run the business.
Yeah.
And so when somebody starts backlashing at you like that, there's only so much you can do. And as a small company, you're afraid to lose people. It's hard to replace people.
Yeah.
But there comes a time and point where it's just like, hey, the amazing thing was, once he was gone, we excelled so much faster.
Really?
You don't realize that sometimes that toxicity is really worse than you think it is. Mm-hmm. And so it was a hard lesson to learn. It was something I really didn't want to do. I called my lawyer on my way to the airport, got all her information, and got off the plane and made the phone call on my way, because he was remote. Mm. And so had to let him go that day. And it was tough, but it was... like having a coach like that to help you navigate tough conversations, having a lawyer that you can contact and, make sure I do it all right. Am I within my rights to do this way? And Texas is a work to right state, so that's pretty easy. But, I still want to handle it right. He did a great job for the company, and just I don't know where he went wrong.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to part ways with certain people.
Yeah.
I think that, and Garrett Moss just posted about this on LinkedIn. I've seen it happen so many times just in this business. So I've been here since 2018, and this is, an interesting, little, community, because we've went from, not making it at all and being really small to being this giant, super successful company. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of people whose lives have significantly changed because of the success of this company. Like, a whole exec team of people who, went from making, $60,000, $70,000 a year to having, real wealth, honestly.
Yeah.
And I think that I've seen a lot of people that, got to experience that get so stuck on certain things, certain injustices that they've perceived, and they just really get in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always so sad when I see it, because it's like, what happened? This was your opportunity. Like, you had a real career.
Some people can't make the shift.
They can't. Like, no. It's wild to me how much some people just get in their own way.
They always, she's always taught us, people that got you here are not the people that are going to get you there.
Yeah.
Right? There's a big mind shift from where we're at right now to where we're going, and we're going to go pretty fast next year. And I keep talking to my staff about, look, guys, here's where we are now. What is your job going to look like when we're doubled where you are? And their eyes get super big, and they're like, I don't know. And you got to have the people that know.
Yeah.
You got to have the people that know how to go from here to there, or be willing to go from here to there. Some people aren't willing. Mm-mm. Some people are like, oh no, I'm not going to work that hard, or I'm not going to put in the extra time, for a short amount of time while we get there, or until we can get the next employee in place, or.
Or they don't know what it looks like.
Yeah. And well, I don't know what it looks like. I've never been there before. I tell my staff that all the time. Like, I'm a new CEO. I've never been a CEO before. I've been a CEO for the past 9 years. I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah.
Like, I've never been the gazillionaire, right? I'm here, and we're going to go there, and I'm going to figure it out as we go, or I'm going to hire the right people that know how to get from here to there. And it's just openness, right? Like, I talk to my team a lot, probably way more than most CEOs talk to their staff, but I want them to know where we're going, and I want to know if they're on board or not. And if you're not on board, I want to help you go somewhere else.
So how do you communicate to your team? Like, what does that look like for you on a weekly basis?
Like you and I talking right now.
Really?
I'm just very open on all of it. No groups, all of it. Every Friday we have a meeting, and I'm like, hey, here's where we're at. And we had a big problem in our accounting, and I was like, wow, we're doing a lot more. We're like 20% up, but we're in the negative right now. And I'll tell my team, we're in the negative. We're like $20,000 in the negative. I know that check's going to come this week, but we're in the negative right now, so y'all watch. And then I'm like, why are we in the negative? We're 20% up in sales. We should not be in the negative. And I sat down in when we transferred our payroll to QuickBooks, it had doubled it 3 months. So it took triple payroll out.
Yep.
We're like, oh, there's the problem. So once we fix it, oh, okay, we're not in the red anymore. And I mean, I tell my team, like, we're not going to have a big profitable year this year because we're scaling.
Yeah.
Right? I got to put people in place. I got to pay for payroll that's not going to bring us an income for a while until they get up to a certain point. You know, your business development people don't walk in with wads of jobs in their hands. It takes them a good 6-7 months to get out there and get rolling and get clients coming in. And you got to have the cash flow for that. And so I tell my team, this year is a scaling year. We're going to have a lot of sales come in, but we're going to have a lot of money going out. Until that levels out next year, we're going to have a lower year this year.
So you're totally open with them? You show them financials every month? Show them everything?
No, I don't show all the financials every month. I think that makes people panic a lot. And it can go good or bad, right? Okay. If you're having a great year, everybody feels like you should give all the money to them.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Right? Like, oh, you had a great year. I should have a gazillion dollar bonus. Well, no, I got to have money in the bank to hire the two people that I got to get us to the next level.
Yep.
Like, I do not have a big paycheck. My paycheck is very small. And if I need money, then I'll take it. But most of my money is staying in the company so that I can grow the company and I'll get my payout later.
That's right.
Right? When we get up there super high and we have all the money in the world, then I'll take big monies.
Yep.
But until then, here's where we're going. The money stays here. I invest in the company a lot. I invest in the next employee until we can get, like, I've got two guys right now that have been on my team for 7 months and they don't even have their licenses yet.
Really?
Because the state is so flipping slow at getting it done.
So what do they do? What do you do to keep them busy?
They go with my other team and keep learning. There's some things they can do is, so we have to get a certificate. So we go to class for a week, get our training, get our certificate, and then you go take your, then you got to wait 30 days to go take your test. And then you got to wait 30 days to get your results. And then you got to wait 30 days to apply for your license. Mm. So technically, it should take no more than 4 months. We're going on whatever March is to now, May, June, July, August, October, November, December.
Yeah.
So we're in our 7th month now. And I'm paying them with not much return because they can't go do any jobs on their own.
Yeah, but you have to, right? I mean, that's how you have to get new talent in the door and keep them in the door.
Or hire somebody that's already in the industry.
Yeah.
DCG is hiring. I need two office people. I need two people in the field with their air monitors or inspectors. And so it's just, you know, and it's hard to put it out there. You put something on LinkedIn and you get every recruiter in the world.
Oh,
I have people for you to look at. I'm like, are they? I very specifically said, I need people that are TDSH licensed asbestos inspector. Oh, no, they're not that. I'm like, yeah, no, thank you. I'm not waiting another 7 months.
Yeah, they're not that, and it's going to be 20% of their annual salary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, the recruiting field, it's kind of a joke, in my opinion.
It's hard.
Sorry to all the recruiters out there. My accounting department almost sent out $200,000. We'd been communicating with one of our main vendors for 2 weeks, and they were getting hacked because they just set up this new payroll. Like, it was leaving the bank. We stopped it.
I had the same thing.
It's crazy.
I had somebody contacted one of my clients and said, hey, don't ACH that. Send us a check. We changed something. And he caught it.
We just hired a chief technology officer, and he set up something called abnormal something. So it's like this really intense spam filtering system that like catches all of this. And that's the only reason I caught this today. So we were in an executive meeting, and we're going through the different emails that are coming in because we're like highly targeted as a company because of our size.
Yeah.
And we have like Garrett's very visible on LinkedIn. So there's just some visibility to the company. So we're like heavily attacked. And we're going through the different emails, and I see the one that happened today. And I'm like, I'm reading it. And he'd sent it to me the week before. And I was like super flippant about it. I was like, no, that looks like the exact amount of money I told her to get out the door. Like, I don't have time for this, right? Like, I don't have time for this. And so I'm like reading through it, like in front of the entire executive team. And I'm just like, holy shit, that's fake.
Yeah.
And so like I run over and I get my bank on the phone, and they're like, there's still time to reverse it. And I was like,
thank God.
I mean, I just like crumbled.
Yeah.
I mean, $200,000.
Yeah.
Like, that's like not a small amount of money.
No. That's like, not easy to get back either.
Christmas time in HVAC.
Yeah.
Like, we haven't worked. I mean, we're working, but we haven't made any money in weeks, you know? Like, it was crazy. Like, I had, that was probably, I almost threw up. Like, I was that nervous
about
it. Yeah,
that's a lot of money.
It's insane. And then, you know, my two accountants, they're upset. They don't, it's like, it's just wild. Like, I'm calling the president of the vendor. I'm like, this is insane. Like, y'all are being, like, directly targeted. Like, how many of your other customers didn't have the spam filter in place that we do and have sent hundreds of thousands of dollars out? Like, because it was not, like, typical. It just, like, I'm still so blown away by it. Like, that I just, like, I'm going to be dreaming about it tonight.
That's part of being ownership, you know, right? It's like owning your own company. You're always got that vulnerability of that, like, a mistake. How do you, we discovered $246,000 in credit card charges that the somebody did not press the final button. So in QuickBooks, it looks like it's paid. QuickBooks says, yep, paid. But then you have this one little mark that says, okay. And it, until you hit that okay button, it doesn't actually go through.
No.
And we've caught it during reconciling. But I didn't have somebody in that position for like 4 months. And so nothing was getting reconciled. So nobody caught it until, like, this is from August of 24 to probably March of 25, $256,000 of credit card transactions that weren't correctly charged.
Dang.
To go back to clients and say, hey, I know we sent you a copy of a paid invoice, but it never actually hit the bank. Can you please go check yours?
How much of it were you able to get back?
I don't know where we're at right now. I haven't checked this last week to see how much we've gotten. We got some pretty big ones, like our big, big vendors.
They're
like, hey,
it.
Yeah, they didn't even question it. They're just like, here, charge my card again. But like homeowners are so hard to get to, you
tell
know.
Tell me about it.
And you don't want to call right before Christmas and go, hey, by the way, you owe me $1,500. No, I don't. And what do you do? I can't make them pay it.
No.
No, it's past the lien marks. It's past all kinds of like anything you can do to get it back.
Gosh, I don't know. I'm going to put a rough number on this. 10%? We write off 10% every year to residents and homeowners?
We write off a lot.
If we don't collect while we're in the home, good luck.
Yep.
You are not getting the money back. Like, our new construction stuff, we get paid fine. 45 days, somebody's sending me a check, rock and roll.
Yep.
Change out, somebody's doing finance, I get that money. But if I run a residential service call at your house, the likelihood that if I don't collect from you at the time, you're going to blow me off until I stop calling.
We changed it with residential. You have to pay before we'll send you the report.
Genius.
So we'll come out and do all the testing, and we get your name and your email. We have a form that they have to sign that says if their insurance doesn't pay, they're still liable for it. And then we make them pay. Like, I tell them straight up front, here's what it's going to cost. We're going to come do the testing. It'll take us 24 hours to get the results. The office is going to call you for payment, and then they will mail you. Then they'll send you the report. And changing that has negated a lot of that for us.
That's good.
And then having that form has helped us, like, insurance companies mail the homeowner the check. And then they're like, oh, I spent it. Well, you spent my money.
Yeah.
But insurance doesn't detail out and say, hey, you owe $5,000 to Moss and $2,000 to GCG. They don't. They just send them a check.
Dang. So that slows your collections down a lot.
It's helped a lot, but it's still a fight.
Yeah.
Especially when the insurance. So we take the email from insurance. Because if they say insurance is going to pay, we call insurance and get approval first.
Mm.
We send them that form that they signed saying that they can send it to us, and they still send it to the homeowner. And we don't know. You know, we have 30-day
That's
terms
exhausting.
With them. So we have 30 days and we got to wait. And they've already cashed that check. It's gone. So now we have to sit and fight and go, no, you still owe me.
Anytime you have to deal with insurance, it makes it like 1,000 times harder.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime.
Sometimes. It depends on the insurance company.
Really?
Some of them are pretty easy and pretty good.
I just was yelling at our insurance company an hour ago. I was mad about the ACH thing. I took it out on the insurance company. That's okay, though. Well, Shelly, thank you so much for coming on Pressure Tested today. I feel like it took us a little bit of time to get face to face.
Yeah.
And I think that was definitely on my part, but I'm excited that you came and I loved our conversation.
Same for me. Oh, it was a pleasure coming. I really enjoyed it and I enjoyed getting to know more about you too.